Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Episode 130 of the Keith Law Show. My guest today will be repeat offender Joe Posnanski, talking about his new book, Why We Love Baseball, A History in 50 Moments. And it is fantastic. I absolutely tore through it. It showed up on a Friday just as I had finished a previous book. And that is, if you ever want me to get me to read something, the best time to do it is when I have just finished a book and have not yet decided on what my next book will be. So I didn't even have a chance to put it in the queue. I do always have a queue of sorts. I have a to-be-read shelf in order, in chronological order, in which I received the books, and also I have an unread folder on my Kindle. I'm not sure what that says about me. Anyway, before we get to that, I have been on PTO for a little bit, back this week, working on a couple of pieces. Nothing is run yet. For those of you who do follow me for board game content, I did go to Gen Con, the biggest board game convention in the Western Hemisphere every year. It set a record with over 70,000 unique attendees this year. I played, saw, demoed, learned about a slew of new games, and wrote a huge piece for Pace Magazine that ran about a week and a half ago, where I ranked the 10 best new games I saw or tried at Gen Con and then ran through literally everything else I saw. Also got to talk to a couple of you at Gen Con, which is always fun. Played a game or two with some of you, and I've said this before many times, but one of the great things for me about these conventions, especially somebody who can be kind of anxious in social situations, is just sitting down at a table with a group of strangers and playing a game and finding some kind of connection, common ground, even though you may not ever see or talk to these people again. And you just repeat that experience over and over again. And I have always found I get quite a bit out of it. So take a look for that if you are interested at all. And then I'll be reviewing a lot of these games that I got or saw or that have shown up in the mail since Gen Con going forward. Also, for those of you who follow me for music or for movie content, I did finally review the Barbie movie and on my blog, meadowparty.com/blog. And just today posted a new music playlist that was actually for the month of July. I just never got around to finishing it because I went away and was on PTO and was trying to stay off the computer, which I was moderately successful at. Definitely recommend that. A little bit of a digital break. Probably should have done more of one, but it was pretty good while I was off. So feel free to check both of those posts out over at the dish, meadowparty.com/blog. Now it is my great pleasure to be joined by my longtime friend, sports writer, multiple book authoring guy, Joe Posnanski, who has authored another book, as it turns out, Why We Love Baseball, A History in 50 Moments, which will be out on September 5th. Joe, thank you so much for joining me.
Keith, always great.
So why would I, a person who obviously hates baseball and all 30 teams, want to read this book. This sounds like the Satanic Bible or something.
Yeah, no, this is totally not up your alley at all. I mean, with the amount of baseball hate that you have, you know, look, this is I mean, you already know this, but this is a countdown in a way of the most magical moments in baseball history. And it comes from this place. You and I have talked about this, and I'm glad for us to talk about it publicly a little bit. You know, people always, not everybody, but you will see so many people knocking baseball everywhere you turn, right? Baseball is not what it used to be. Baseball is dying. The kids don't like baseball, this, that, and the other. And this has been going on for 100 years. Baseball is dying more than 100 years. Which is very funny when you think about each generation has its new baseball is dying trend, right? But I started to think about it in a different way. And what I started to think about was, isn't the miracle of baseball that it isn't dying? I mean, isn't the miracle that we still care about this game that they were playing during the Civil War? There is literally nothing from that time period that we still care about. Nothing. I mean, from a sports perspective, that's before basketball, before football was anything, before there were no golf courses. I mean, there was nothing when baseball was starting. And here it is in 2023, and it's still huge, and we still care about it. And I really wanted to sort of tell that story, why we still love this game. And what it came down to for me is, I think, the things, like, when you and I get together, what do we talk about? We talk about prospects that, you know, we've seen when they were young and weren't anything yet, or we see some incredible play we saw. I mean, it's moments. It's so much about the moments of these games. And I thought, this is how I do it. I tell the story of baseball and why we love it through its most magical moments. And so it is called A History in 50 Moments. That's on the cover. So there is a countdown of 50 moments. But as you all know, there are many, many, many more than 50 moments in here. They're actually,
yeah, this is like the Big Ten.
It's the Big, right? Ten. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. There are 108 moments that I have counted in there, and there might even be more than that. But I counted 108 because I mean, that's such a great baseball number, right? The number of stitches on a ball, the years between World Series for the Cubs, and so on and so on. So I see it as 108 moments, but there are 50 that are sort of the core of this book that take you from number 50, which I will give away, which is Dwayne Kuiper's only home run, all the way down to number one and everything in between. So I think it's really, I'm so happy with it. You know, you've written a book, you know what that feeling is like, you know, that there's this tension, and like, will people like this, and will this sell? Will I be able to ever write another book? I mean, there's so many other things that go through your mind. And none of that's going through my mind with this book. All I think about with this book, and I'm lucky to feel that way, but all I feel about this book is, I really, really like this book, and I cannot wait for people to see it. You know, it's just how I feel about it.
Oh, absolutely. It's a fun book, and it is nothing against the Baseball 100, which I'm looking at right now on my shelf. But this is a more accessible, I hate to say more readable, because again, that sounds derogatory towards the other book, but this is different. This book flows a little more for, I think, maybe the more casual fan, even though you are obviously mining some more obscure moments from baseball history. But the Baseball 100 to me was more for the more serious fan, particularly fans of baseball history, whereas the historical anecdotes you're telling in this book, many of which go back 100 plus years, are always interesting, even if you know nothing about the players, the times. Like, you have fun little footnotes on who were the Brooklyn Superbas or the Brooklyn Bridegrooms, right? The names that, unless you are a total baseball nerd, you probably have never heard before. I mean, I remember having them in I don't know, a baseball encyclopedia or something. You know, you're pouring back at the weird standings. What do you mean teams didn't play the same number of games? And this team folded halfway through the season. And you see all these strange names. That, like, those don't mean anything to anybody. I can't believe the Brooklyn Tip Tops did not get a mention.
Yeah.
In the book.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know. Well, what it feels to me as mm-hmm. you know, and of course, I love the baseball 100, and it
sure.
changed my life.
I did
and,
too.
And it's you know I it's to me it's an achievement, you know, to do that book. I mean, it was 860 pages long and all of this, and I think it was it's also great fun, but it's different. This is a more personal book for me, and I've been you know, we're getting ready. The book comes out in 2 weeks, so I am thinking a lot about, all right, what am I talking about? What am I thinking about? You know, as I do podcasts, as I, you know, go on tour, all of these other things, what am I going to be focused on? And one of the things I thought about was, and I had not thought about it when I was writing it, the Baseball 100 was limiting in ways because I was only writing about greatness. Like, every player in the Baseball 100 is great. And of course, nothing's better than writing about greatness, right? I mean, nothing is more fun, nothing is more challenging than trying to, you know, what made Carlton Fisk great? What made Sandy Koufax great? I mean, those, but it was limiting. I couldn't write about Dwayne Kuiper's one home run in the Baseball 100. There was no place to put.
He's not one of the 100 greatest players in baseball history.
He is in my mind. To me, yes. he is right up at the top. But as you know, I mean, part of what makes baseball so special is that you don't have to be great to have done a moment that belongs, you know, among the greatest moments in baseball history. Some of the biggest home runs. I mean, you know, Bill Mazeroski is in the Hall of Fame, but Bill Mazeroski was not a great player. He was a great defensive player, but he was not a great player. And as we know, when he got into the Hall of Fame, the uproar was so bad, they basically shut down the Hall of Fame for like a decade. They're like, yeah, we're not putting anybody else in. We, you know, we put Bill Mazeroski in. It's time to close the doors. Yeah, which was a shame. I mean, because Bill Mazeroski it was a fantastic defensive player and all of that.
Well, and can I just say, like, I always thought there was an argument to be made that if you're telling me that so-and-so is the best defensive player at his position in the history of baseball, that's a good argument to put a guy in the Hall of Fame.
I agree. And you know, I thought the uproar about him getting in the Hall of Fame was really overblown. I mean, look, he was. I think you could make the argument the best second baseman who ever lived, and he hit one of the biggest home runs and all of that. But he was not a great hitter. There was no place to put him in the Baseball 100. But now there's a place. Now I'm writing about the, you know, this moment, and there are people who were not as great as Bill Mazeroski who did amazing things that are in this book, and so it was so much. I guess it was more freeing because I could really let my mind go wherever it wanted to go, and I could take whatever moments I wanted to take. And as you pointed out, and I think to me this is why I hope the book is going to be so much fun for people. There are famous moments in here throughout and great players in here throughout. I mean, you'll find Willie Mays and Shohei Ohtani and Babe Ruth and Jackie Robinson and the greats in here. But those are intermixed with all of these moments that you probably, unless you are a truly, truly insane baseball fan, there are moments in here you've never heard of, like never, because there are moments in here that I had never heard of when I started writing the book. And I think that when you combine, you know, the famous and the not famous together, I think it really makes it a lot of fun.
Yes, that's to me one of the great strengths of the book. And there are many. I read the book in 2 days, basically.
It's awesome.
Just couldn't put the thing down, and is that it gives so much time to the lesser players, the less remembered players, the Dwayne Kuipers of the world, right?
Right.
We want those guys to get their moment. I always say, when speaking to friends, family, etc., remember these are all every player who gets to the big leagues was a kid 7, 8 years old, playing in the backyard or in the street, dreaming of having that hit in the World Series, win the World Series, or just getting to the big leagues achieves the dream. And for players, you know, I've known plenty of guys who got that one day in the big leagues, and I know plenty of guys who never got there. And it does make a difference in their for the rest of their lives to be able to say, I got there.
Absolutely.
I got there and I got one game. I didn't do, you know, maybe I didn't make the Hall of Fame. Maybe I stayed up there for a week and that was it. And your book celebrates a lot of those moments for players like that who were in the majors only often only briefly, but happened to run into history. You know, a guy who happens to throw a no-hitter in one of his handful of starts that he ever makes in the big leagues, right? Those are, to me, those are a huge part of baseball lore. And the idea of a player who we think of as ordinary doing the extraordinary is a big thing in baseball. I don't know. I can't speak to other sports, but I think it stands out more in baseball because we are a team sport of individual accomplishments. And that's at least less true of the other major sports where we know who the great players are, but great moments are generally less tied to a single player's full game performance, say.
Right.
And you know, to me, like the no-hitters, you mentioned many no-hitters in the book. You mentioned Jim Abbott's no-hitter in the book, which is the one no-hitter, the one major league no-hitter I have been at in person.
Amazing.
Yes, an amazing moment. Before I worked in baseball, obviously. And it was great reading your description of that, too, because it put me very, very much back in the seats with my family, watching it happen, thinking about it again. And again, he's not a Hall of Famer, but he's a guy to remember, and that was certainly a moment to remember. And to me, that is what the book really brings, even beyond remembering a lot of the superstars, who of course have their moments, right?
Sure.
Superstars were in there. And I'm curious how you decided maybe to balance some of these things where, you know, how much do I put the superstar moments in there versus, you know, the, yeah, I mean, you know, you're not on Twitter a ton, but the remember some guys, you have a lot of those, right? Let's remember some guys.
And that's
great. And I was curious how you decided how to try to balance those things.
It's a super question. Cause it was the enduring question. What was my driving principle? And I don't know if you did you come up with the title Smart Baseball while you were writing it or before you wrote it, or did you not come up with that title until after you were done?
I had come up with it during the writing because it was a riff on that hashtag I used to do. I still do sometimes where you take the A out because it's the Homer Simpson joke. I am smart, SMRT, right? And, you know, referring to really dumb things that teams, especially managers, would do in baseball. And so that was always kicking around as a possible title. But I very much took the attitude of, like, hey, we're the major publisher. If they think there's a better title out there, I'm gonna listen to them.
Right.
And then we just ended up using it.
Yeah, and I think it's a really, really good title for exactly the reasons you said. All of my books, pretty much, I came up with the title after I was done. And sometimes well after they were done. Soul of Baseball was originally called Baseball and Jazz, and that was how I had it in my mind. And I loved Baseball and Jazz, and they just didn't, the publishing house didn't quite love it. But anyway, this was the one book that I came up with the title first. And everything that I did was sort of geared to the title. So when I was thinking about what moments to include, how to mix, that was my driving force the whole time. It's like, all right, is this a moment that explains why we love baseball? And some great moments in baseball history, in my mind, kind of don't. They don't necessarily tell you why. They don't fit that bill of why we love baseball. I mean, not to pick on him because he's very much in the book, and I found a very joyful place for him. But I don't think Barry Bonds breaking the home run record is why we love baseball. It's just for a million reasons, not forgetting about, it's just not. And yes, for Barry Bonds fans, of course it is, but it was not a celebration. It wasn't for so many reasons. And not to, again, Barry Bonds is in the book, and I found joy with Barry Bonds, which isn't easy as we know, but all of it was like that. So I remember one of my favorite chapters in this book, and I'll talk about it a little bit. It's I've been wanting to keep surprises. Like, that's such a big thing for me in this book, because it's, I think this book goes in so many different directions. But I do want to talk about this one chapter, because it's sort of specifically it specifically has to do with how I chose obscure moments versus great moments. I was in the Hall of Fame during doing research. I was in Cooperstown and I was walking around. I was doing like actual research where, you know, I was pulling files and all of that. And my wife was with me and we were just walking around. We're like, let's just take a break, walk around the museum. It's such a, you know, wonderful place to be. And we started walking around and we went to the section where they had women in baseball, which is just like a little corner. They've got some really cool stuff there. It's not that big, but, you know, I mean, let's be honest, women in baseball, it's not been a big celebrated part of the game. And there was a little picture that they had there and a jersey, and it was of a little leaguer named Chelsea Baker. And I did not remember her story. I did not know anything about her. And I looked, and there it was. And it was like, Chelsea Baker threw two perfect games in her Florida Little League when she was 11 and 12 or something like that. And they had her jersey. And I thought, why do I not know this story? I'm sure I must have seen it. I'm sure I read something and it just left my mind. And I thought, well, that's really cool. And I went back to them and I said, hey, do we know what's going on with Chelsea Baker? And they're like, no, nobody has any idea what happened to her, where she went. I'm like, did she stop playing? Did she continue playing? So I did a little bit of research and found out that she did keep playing a little bit. And she actually ended up pitching against the Rays in a batting practice before a game. And it was kind of cool. And she threw the knuckleball. That was the cool part about her, is that she threw the knuckleball. And I started thinking, well, I got to have a knuckleball story in this book. I don't know anything about this Chelsea Baker. And I tried to find her, which was not that easy. It's not that she was hiding, but she's not involved in baseball anymore and whatever. And I found her the way the kids do, right? I found her on Instagram. And then it's like, how do you reach out to a 20-something girl on Instagram, young woman on Instagram, when you're a 50? I mean, I'm not a
little sketchy.
Creep. I'm just, exactly. so I asked my daughters, you know, how do I do this? And they're like, oh, just tell her that you're an author and whatever. And she reached out to me and we started talking, and her story ended up being so much better than I even thought it was. She learned the knuckleball from Joe Niekro. I mean, and her story, and she still loves baseball, but she, you know, it got too hard. It was, you know, just trying to fight against the system all the time. And, you know, they wanted her to go to Japan and pitch in Japan. And it's like, I love baseball, but I don't want to upturn my life. I love other things. She just ended up being the coolest woman that you could ever meet. And I'm like, nobody's going to know this story. Nobody is. But if you are going to talk about why we love baseball, I mean, knuckleballs and Joe Niekro and Little League and perfect games. And I mean, it's everything. It's like, it's one of my favorite chapters in the book. So that was what drove me. What drove me was, why do we love baseball, and pushing to whatever that meant. And of course, why we love baseball. I mean, is Kirk Gibson's home run going to be in here? Of course it is, right? I mean, that's why we love baseball. But there are so many moments like Chelsea Baker's that I put in here that I think make the book really, really fun.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
One of the other interesting editorial decisions was you include moments that never happened. There's quite a bit of reference within the book to baseball fiction, mostly film, which it's, I have to admit, it took me a little bit aback when I got to the first one. It's like, oh,
yeah,
this isn't exactly what I expected. Not criticizing, just saying that's not what I thought this was going to be.
Sure.
And I was very curious how you decided to do that. Did you get pushback from anyone, especially your editors, saying, wait, this is not... You know, Bugs Bunny never actually played baseball, right? Sorry if I spoiled there, but everyone's going to know. Like,
spoiler
the Bugs
alert, Bugs
book.
Bunny yeah. is not real. Is that what you're saying? Like, you're just making that as a...
I don't know. What if the kids are listening? Right?
No pushback. I got no pushback on anything that I did, which is, you know, I cannot be more grateful to the publishing house. They were incredible throughout this process. I got a little pushback from my wife. Who not so much, she just didn't want a lot of it. Like, she understood, to me, so much of baseball, and I'm doing a version of this for football, and football is very different. It's just completely different in so many ways. And part of it is that I don't see football, like, we don't embrace football fiction the same way we embrace, you know, but why we love baseball is why we love baseball, seeing Dottie and her sister collide at home plate at the end of League of Their Own. Of course it is. Is it seeing the catch in Field of Dreams? Yes. I mean, is it seeing Bugs Bunny throw the slow ball? Yeah. I mean, it's a part of it. And I didn't want it to just go off the deep end, right? I didn't want it just to be like, wait, what really happened? What didn't happen? Or were we just mixing everything in there? But to me, I thought, this is such a big topic for me. I'm thinking about football a lot because I'm working on that. Football is so narrow. The emotions are so heightened, but it's so narrow. It's not a world game. Right. There's no football in Japan, no football in the Dominican, no football. And, you know, it's a very narrowly focused world. Baseball is not. Baseball is everywhere. Right. Like, baseball is in the language. Baseball is in fiction. Baseball is in the movies. Baseball's on television. Baseball's in international in a much bigger way. And growing in a lot of ways. Yeah. Growing. Baseball is Little League. Baseball is like trick plays in college baseball. One of my favorite chapters. Baseball is just, and I wanted to capture that 360, right? I wanted the whole view of this why we love baseball thing. So I threw some quirky moments in there as well. I mean, I threw some fiction in there. I think it's fiction everybody will recognize. I didn't go like, you know, like, oh, I once read this one book. Yeah. And some of it, right. And some of it I did because I'm like, this is so fun. And I did not know this. Like, there's a story here that comes with this bit that I didn't know. So that's really fun. But it's also, you know, like moments that are maybe, you know, they're like, wait, this was just a silly little baseball moment, you know, like, this is just silly, but silly is a part of baseball too. And I think that's, you know, it's the one sport we play every day, right? It's the one sport that just, so every single day, the stuff I remember about baseball from games that I went to are the weird little things that happened, the goofy errors that were made, or the you know, odd decisions or whatever. It's all part of it. So I wanted to get that complete view of it.
I liked it. I have to say, it definitely threw me. especially the shift right back and forth from like that really happened. Here's the thing that really happened that I remember. Here's the thing that really happened that I don't remember because I'm 50, not 120. Right. Here's the thing that definitely never happened, but that I remember. Right? I remember. Absolutely. I remember watching Bugs Bunny strike out. This is the Gas House Gorillas.
The Gas House Gorillas. Very good.
See, I can't believe I just pulled it. Well, obviously I just read the book too, but still I pulled that one out. I'm like reasonably pleased with myself on that one. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of meat in here to discuss and debate, which brings me to the next question, which is probably the most obvious one, but how'd you decide and especially how'd you rank? And there's no science here. I'm not pretending that, but you, how much of this is you, your opinion as a lifelong baseball fan, a sports writer for your whole career, who really knows the sport, and how much of this is you reached out to other people, like you mentioned talking to Mike Schur, for example.
Yes.
Who wrote approximately 40% of the book in one essay.
We just couldn't get him to stop. It just kept coming. It's like, no. It was.
Yes.
Just so
I know
funny.
Mike. I don't know Mike as well as you do, but I know Mike and I read his book, How to Be Perfect. I mean, it's so funny because that's him.
It's right? him. That's exactly. Him. It's
there's no question at all. It just sounds just like him. Like, oh yeah, that's Mike.
Yeah,
yep, absolutely.
Yeah. I made the mistake because I gave Mike a chapter. There are a couple of other people who wrote in this book, which was lucky for me. But with Mike, I said, you know, hey, I want you to write a chapter, and I wanted to be about the Red Sox, and I wanted to be about the greatest Red Sox moment, which I had chosen already, the Red Sox moment. And Mike's like, all right, I'll write
it's
about
a good choice.
Yeah,
it's a good choice.
And I wrote, and then Mike's like, yeah, I'll write about the best Red Sox moment. And then he wrote about whatever the heck he wanted. I mean, he just went off the deep end, which is just so Mike. Yeah, I mean, this whole ranking is, you know, I mean, some of it is very personal. Some of it is just, hey, for the flow of the book. I mean, you know, mix. I mean, the difference between 30 and 29 is whatever.
Yes.
But when I got to the top 10, like that, I took that very, very, I mean, I took it all seriously, but I took that part most seriously because that's where I felt like I was making statements. You know, if you rank something 47, okay, you know what? You just think it's a great moment. You're not saying to people like, hey, this is one of the greatest moments of baseball history. You're saying this is a great moment. And here's the story behind it, and I hope you love it. But you tell somebody it's one of the 10, you know, most magical moments in baseball history. You're making a statement about that moment, and especially top five, and especially what's number two and what's number one. And I Right. spent a lot of time, and I don't want to give that away, but I spent a lot of time because I think most people ranking the most magical, important, greatest moments in baseball history would have my number two moment at number one without hesitation. That would be their right. number one moment because it is the moment. Sure. And I wanted to say that moment is incredible, but that moment led to the number one moment in my mind. So I, yes. I was definitely making a statement, and I could see people saying, hey, I disagree with you, and that's part of the fun too. There are some moments in here that I ranked lower than I think most people would expect them to be ranked, and I would say that was a statement too, like, hey, I don't think this moment is as great as it has been portrayed in throughout baseball history. It's a great moment, but I don't see it as one of the, you know, 10 greatest moments, for example.
That's fair. It's interesting you say that because I went into the book with no thought of what was going to be one. And I didn't cheat. I didn't peek.
Okay.
It's like, I get there when I get there, right? I was very interested to see how you got there also. Mm-hmm. Not just what the moment was, but it's like, I know you. I know your writing. We're going to get to that point. It's going to be organic when we get there. And it does work. And it's funny you say that because I got to number two and thought, Oh, that would have been a good number one, wouldn't it?
That would probably, that, maybe that should have been number one. Like, yikes.
But you know what was funny was I wasn't thinking along those lines, too. I was thinking of the more traditional, a baseball moment, right?
Yes, like, yes.
A hit, a
yes.
play, the catch, right? Something like that. I was like, oh, no, Joe's, yeah. Well, I mean, this is why Joe is Joe, right? He's thinking a much more, you know, you get the granular view and you get the 30,000 foot view and it's, oh yeah, this actually makes a tremendous amount of sense. And also lets you tell some great sub stories too.
Yes.
And that's one of the joys of the book is you're like, here's this moment. Oh, here's a sidebar with five similar moments. Oh, I'm telling you about this player in this moment, but let me tell you about this other player
yeah.
or this other story that you actually don't know that much about because I'm one of those idiots who's read a lot of baseball history.
Right.
Even though I actually often tell people, like, baseball history is not my thing. It was much more my thing when I was a kid, but my job so much is future-focused that that's how I think about baseball. But I still know a lot of these stories, but then you would break out the story that I don't know that was the tangent, the digression yeah. to the actual baseball moment, which I – again, always enjoyed quite a bit. And it ended up at the end of the book, not thinking, not once did I think Joe had this too high or this too low, because it's not that kind of book.
Right.
But at the same time, it was, I got there. He got me there.
Yeah.
By the end. Even with the, there was the thing at the end where you're like, here's one moment for every team. And I was reading through those too, which a lot of those were much more recent because they were expansion teams. And
sure.
So I kept thinking, oh yeah, okay, fine. I get this.
Yeah.
I definitely get this a lot more where he was going with even some of these smaller moments for franchises where it was very hard to find one,
yeah.
which I imagine was probably quite a bit of a challenge.
Well, that one was, it was, but I, that was the one part of the book I opened up to fans. I did a survey where I asked fans mm-hmm. to pick the best moments from each team. And so they're all in here. And that was a really important chapter to me. That was sort of, it's the one chapter in the book. I mean, I really like it, but it's the one chapter in the book I didn't get to be too expansive. And I didn't get to do all the things that you're talking about, which I really appreciate. The fun parts of like, yeah, you know what? Let me tell you about the first base coach during the shot heard around the world, right? Like I right. had to basically kind of just tell what the moment was, and that was kind of it. But it was such an important chapter because one thing I came to the end of the book thinking was, hey, there's some teams that do not have a moment in here.
That's not
– you can't have that. It's like the All-Star right. game. You got to have an All-Star. You got to have, you know, every team has had a moment that is why we love baseball. So getting to do that and putting, you know, some of the other teams in there that did not have a moment, I thought that was really important. But that chapter was a little bit different. I mean, I think it's fun. And I like where I put it, right? Like I put it mm-hmm. right there at the very end. It's sort of a little drum roll before you get to the big finish. And so, yeah, that was really fun.
I was curious with a lot of the more historical moments, but ones that are sort of within living memory of some people, at least, you had a lot of great quotes from folks who are no longer with us, including, you know, we get it. There's a lot of Vin Scully. There's an Ernie Harwell quote. There's a bunch of the, I was curious, is that just from your notebooks, from your archives, where just you knew a lot of these people very well?
Yeah.
I met each of those gentlemen once, and it was each one was a thrill of a lifetime. I stood next to Ernie Harwell at the urinals in a bathroom in the Rogers Center, actually. And I looked over and I was like, holy shit, you're Ernie Harwell. I didn't say that, obviously. I believe I actually gathered myself just enough to say something like, I'm a fan, love your work, et cetera.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
a token of respect. And this was his last series ever. Actually, I think he died not that long afterwards because he was already poorly at that point. But I didn't know these people well. And you obviously did. And so I was curious. I think you already started to answer. I was curious how much of this was you just talked to these people and you had lots of notes from years and years. And this was a great opportunity to bust out some of those quotes or some of those anecdotes.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much in here. I mean, a lot of it, of course, is research, right? A lot of it is newspaper research and magazine research and all of that. But guys like Ernie Harwell, who I did get to know pretty well to the point where we were sort of sending emails to each other quite a bit, which was incredible. I actually went back. That was actually one of the fun things And I can't remember specifically what chapter it was for, but I were like, Ernie Harwell sent me an email about this at some point. And yeah, and I went back and, you know, went through the Gmail search and, you know, for Ernie Harwell. And then I found, you know, a series of, you know, 7, 8, 9 emails or something that I'd gotten from Ernie Harwell. I'm getting to reread those again and, you know, felt incredible. And, you know, I was really, really lucky to have a relationship with Vin Scully and you know, did multiple stories on him. And he was obviously everything that everybody knows him to be. And we talked about a lot of things, you know, which was great. One of the real benefits of this of this book was several years ago now. I worked with my friend Jonathan Hawk on the movie that they play at the Baseball Hall of Fame. I wrote the movie Generations of the Game, and John directed it. So we went around and interviewed 20, 25 Hall of Famers for that movie. And I've got all of the video of that and the transcripts. So I was able to go back. I mean, this is, you know, everybody from Greg Maddux to Ricky Henderson to Ozzie Smith to George Brett to Tom Seaver, Bob Gibson. I mean, guys that are no longer with us, Al Kaline, Phil Niekro. I mean, just incredible. And, you know, some of those are the only times I've ever really had a chance to talk to those people. Others, you know, I got to talk to on other occasions. Tom Seaver, to me, I never really gotten to spend any time with Tom Seaver. So the interview we had with him for the, you know, that really informed a lot of my thought. And he was already not doing well. It was already, you know, close to the end for him. But he still was, you know, he was still Tom Seaver, you know what I mean? Like there was still this aura about him. So that very, very lucky. I mean, lived a pretty good baseball life as far as that goes. And, you know, football is, as I think about that, it's not quite that expansive, but it's kind of the same thing where I like got to spend time with a lot of people who are no longer with us, who gave me, you know, who talked. I don't know. I think it's just because of the way I am, but I talked to these people about like lots of things, you know what I mean? Like when I would spend time with Marty Schottenheimer, I didn't just talk to him about like what, you know, what next week's game was like. I wanted to talk to him about what it was like, you know, playing in the AFL and what it was like, you know, growing up in Pittsburgh. And so like stuff like that, you don't even know at the time how much it's going to mean later, but it means so much, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One other thing I kept wondering, you know, this is a little bit of the author in me thinking too, is did a lot of stuff end up on the cutting room floor? Like you didn't just write 50 moments exactly. And right. You're like, I'm good. I'm good. Right. I got 50, right? There were always players who don't make my top 100. There are songs that didn't make my year end best of the year list where it bugs me, right? It's not yes. Like, yeah, that one was borderline. It's like, God, I wish I could have found space for that one.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can if you have specific ones, great, but I'm just curious how much of that ended up happening. Is there like a director's cut coming when this goes to like, I don't know, Paramount Plus at some point?
Right. Well, there is a director's cut. I'll talk about that in just a minute. But more stuff went to the cutting room floor than any book I've written. And the Baseball 100, there were more people cut that broke my heart, like players that I wanted to get in that I didn't get in because it was 100. That was it. Like I could have written about 200 or 500. I mean, you know, there were so many players I wanted to write about, but here's the difference. I didn't write those chapters. You know what I mean? I've said, I wish I'd gotten Eddie Murray into the Baseball 100. But I didn't write an Eddie Murray chapter. Like I didn't write one and then go, I don't have any room for it. I just didn't write it. So later I wrote an Eddie Murray chapter, but I wrote it essentially from scratch. With this one, there are essays that I wrote and one essay that Mike wrote, actually, that got cut, that got literally cut from the book. And there, Mike knows. Oh, yeah. Mike knows. he's or is still friend. Well, there's a very specific reason why it got cut that he understands. But that happened. I mean, there are probably, I don't know how many, but there are quite a few essays that are complete. They're ready to go in the book that I cut because they just didn't fit. I didn't have time. I didn't have room for them. Even with the conceit of getting as many moments as I wanted in there, I couldn't get them in. So what I am doing is, this is only for pre-orders. If somebody pre-orders the book anywhere, you can pre-order it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the independents, everything. It's available everywhere. As a pre-order, if you pre-order the book, you can go to my site and fill out a form. I have a form on there just called the pre-order form. Fill out a form, just put proof of purchase in your email, and you will get a director's cut of this book. So you will get several of the essays, including Mike's essay, as sort of a bonus. So I'm glad to be able to do that. It's, you know, it's not quite the same. But honestly, I have one particular essay that I loved. I mean, just like it's because it's very, very personal to me. It was my personal moment. And then I was like, no, Dwayne Kuiper is my personal moment. So I'm going to have to put Dwayne on there. So Dwayne took the spot of this other essay, but that other essay, I'm going to include it for people who want to do the pre-order special.
Oh, that's awesome. That is fantastic.
Yes.
I need that essay. Why didn't I get, I need that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have the book, right? No, don't I count?
So. You get it. No, you'll okay. get it. You're okay. going to get the pre-order.
Perfect. Finally, you mentioned that there's going to be a football version of this. Will there be like an indoor soccer version? table tennis, maybe?
I think we stop at football. The football one is, it's still, I'm still writing it. So it's still very raw in my mind. But it's such a cool process because it's so completely different from baseball. And, you know, I grew up, I don't know if you did, I grew up a gigantic baseball and a gigantic football fan. And it was like two completely different parts of me. It brought two completely different emotions out of me. Still does to this day. But I love football and I hate football. And I love baseball, you know? So the book is, in my mind right now, I'm actually calling it Why We Love and Hate Football. That's what I have in my mind. And I think it's going to be similar in its structure. I think, who knows, it could change. Anything can change at this point. But it is, no matter how similar in structure it's going to be, it's going to be a completely different kind of book because the reasons we love football and the reasons we love baseball are not the same. They're just completely different. They're completely different sports. Somebody said this to me, and you as a guy who looks ahead, you're sort of in your own space. I mean, there are other people with you, but you're a leader in your space in baseball. I'd be interested to hear what you think about this. He said, I'll tell you what the difference between football and baseball is. This will be a quote in the book, of course. The biggest event on the baseball calendar that is not on the field is the Baseball Hall of Fame induction. And the biggest event on the football calendar, not on the field, is the draft. And and it's not even close. The draft is bigger than anything anywhere. And he said, that's the difference. Everybody in baseball looks back. Everybody in football looks forward. And I thought, what a profound thought about those two sports. And I think it could be viewed poorly. It could be viewed like, baseball fans are living in the past and football fans are, you know, in today. I don't see it that way. I see it as baseball. You go to a baseball game today, you're also going to a baseball game in 1968, and you're also going to a baseball game in 1991, and you're also going to a baseball game. You know what I mean? It's like, it's this one long continuous string of this game that took us from Babe Ruth all the way through. And in football, you're watching today's game. You're not watching yesterday's game. You're certainly not watching a game from 20 years ago. You are watching today's game. And I love that. They just bring different emotions out of you. So that book is going to be great fun, but I'm going to put that on hold and think only about Why We Love Baseball coming out in a couple of weeks.
That's an interesting thought, because I may be too in it, right? Because the game doesn't look quite the same to me.
Yeah.
And I'm pausing because how much of that is a me thing? Because of the way I watch the game.
Right.
Which I think is different than the way most people watch the game.
Well, that's why I said you're in that world. You are looking forward. That's your whole thing, is looking forward, you know? And look, there's of course, you can overgeneralize this. Of course, baseball looks forward. What's more exciting than a prospect coming up in baseball? Nothing. Nothing's more like everything that is in a 1 or 2 day NFL draft is spread out over a season, when Elly De La Cruz gets called up, when, you know, when some new phenom, you know, hits AAA. Those are the same feelings, the feelings of what's coming. And, you know, that's of course a part of baseball, but it's also, baseball is so connected to family and our, you know, and our childhoods and, you know, the past, in a way that I think football just isn't. And Some of that's to baseball's detriment. I mean, I think it's hard to change in baseball, much easier in football. But some of it is, you know, to baseball's great strength. I mean, it is, here we are, you know, 150 years later, we're still playing this game and loving it. So I think that's, I love the contrast, and I'm really getting to explore that. It's a lot of fun.
The book is Why We Love Baseball, and it is out in, Why We Love Baseball, A History in 50 Moments. It is out on September 5th. I can recommend it very highly. I recommend everything Joe writes, but I can specifically say I read this book in 2 days. Joe, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. For those of you who are looking to follow me on social media, I'm still on Twitter. I'm only calling it Twitter, at Keith Law, but pretty much everywhere else you'd look for me, I'm usually at Keith Law on Blue Sky, Spoutable, Threads, and Instagram. I'm Mr. MR Keith Law. You can look for me there. I do just cross post the same content on all of these sites while we wait to figure out where everyone is going. It does seem like Blue Sky is a nice little sports community, and I'm probably a little more inclined to answer stuff there. But basically, I will tell you the last place you're going to likely to get an answer from me is on the site formerly known as Twitter, because that place just is kind of terrible at this point. That's all for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.